Okay, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about some work which was partially done in collaboration with Ofer Aharoni from the Weizmann Institute, Prem Kumar from Swansea, some work I did with Andrei Parnachev, who's a student in Chicago, is also relevant, and there's some work in progress with Tim Hollowood, which I probably won't have time to mention. So a standard situation that we meet in discussing the application of the ADS-CFT correspondence to gauge theories which are confining is that if we want to reach the physically interesting regime where the theory is asymptotically free and therefore like QCD, we have to create a large hierarchy between the cutoff and the dynamical scale of the theory. And typically in situations where you know of a supergravity dual, it's typically only applicable in another regime where the dynamical scale doesn't have a large hierarchy with the effective cutoff. So in the light of that, the difficulty of actually interpolating between these regimes, it seems of interest whenever we can obtain results, exact results, for the quantum field theory that do interpolate between these regimes, as they might teach us something interesting about how to go beyond the supergravity regime. So in this talk, I'll be providing a discussion of some exact quantum field theory results which in a theory which do allow you to interpolate between these two regimes. And I'll also be trying to make contact with the corresponding work on the ADS side of the correspondence. So in particular, I'll be talking about what's called the N equals 1 star, which is theory, which is the deformation of N equals 4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theories induced by including mass terms for the three chiral multiplets. Now, this theory has been studied before. In particular, most of what we know about it from the field theory side is contained in two papers, one by Vaffer and Witten and another by Dinagiu and Witten. And it's been studied on the supergravity side by various authors. So to discuss the theory, I'll just introduce my notation. For the ultraviolet theory, we are talking about N equals 4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory. So that, as usual, has a marginal coupling, a complex combination of the gauge coupling and the theta parameter. And I'll also define the factor Q, which is associated with Yang-Mills instantons. In talking about the large N limit, we'll also need to define the parameter lambda, which is the Toft coupling, the product of G squared N, which is held fixed in the Toft limit. Now, in terms of N equals 1 supersymmetry, the theory contains a vector multiplet and three chiral multiplets in the adjoint representation of the gauge group. And the most general relevant deformation which you can apply to the theory, which preserves N equals 1 supersymmetry, is essentially just to give three masses, which I'll denote MI, to the three chiral multiplets. And without much loss of generality, we will talk about the case where the masses are set equal to one mass scale M, which we now identify as the ultraviolet cutoff of the asymptotically free theory, which is going to be induced in the infrared. So at least in vacua where the expectation value of the scalar field is zero and the gauge group is unbroken, we expect that at low energies, energy scales much below the mass, the bare mass of the chiral multiplets, that the multiplets will, chiral fields will decouple, and we will have a renormalization group flow from N equals 4 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory to its N equals 1 counterpart, which is, of course, a very interesting theory which exhibits confinement, asymptotic freedom, and a realistic large N limit, which we'd love to be able to examine directly via the ADS-CFT correspondence. To be slightly more precise, the matching between the parameters of the ultraviolet and infrared theory is that the dynamical scale of N equals 1 supersymmetric Yang-Mills is in fact related to the hypermultiplet masses, the chiral multiplet masses, which is the effective cutoff of the N equals 1 theory, by an exponential involving the Toft coupling rather than the ordinary coupling of the ultraviolet theory. And this, of course, is appropriate because in the Toft limit, this means that the lambda parameter, the dynamical scale of the N equals 1 theory, will remain constant and will have a non-trivial theory in its Toft limit. So I'll leave that transparency up. So given that, we see that, as usual, in constructing a supergravity dual, we'll meet the same problem. but the parameter which interpolates between the supergravity regime and the regime where the theory is really similar to N equals 1 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory is effectively the Toft coupling of the ultraviolet theory. So specifically, we expect in general that if we have some kind of a string dual, that supergravity is valid at least in the ultraviolet, where the theory is N equals 4, only in the regime of large lambda, large Toft coupling. And the question of whether it remains valid in the infrared is precisely the question that's examined by people working on the supergravity dual. But on the other hand, we know that asymptotic freedom and decoupling, true decoupling of the chiral, extra chiral matter requires that we take the Toft coupling to be very small. So really the fact that we can say something exact about this situation is not really a surprise. N equals 1 supersymmetry tells us that a certain class of quantities have restrictive dependence on the coupling constants. In fact, they have to depend holomorphically on coupling constant. And in this case, the relevant quantities in a theory with N equals 1 supersymmetry are precisely the chiral condensates, verbs of chiral operators, and also domain walls which interpolate between the different vacua of the theory. Their tensions are determined by a BPS mass formula in terms of a central charge which depends holomorphically on the coupling constants. So what I want to do is to provide some exact results for precisely those quantities and emphasize the fact that they have very non-trivial dependence on the Toft coupling. And ultimately, I want to go to the regime of large Toft coupling and compare with the work of Polchinski and Strassler. So let's first talk about the regime which, from the point of view of QCD, is the regime which is most interesting, the regime where the Toft coupling of the ultraviolet theory is small and there's a large hierarchy between the dynamical scale and the effective ultraviolet cutoff, and we really are talking about pure N equals 1 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory. Despite the fact that it's a strongly coupled theory in the infrared, it's well known that there are some dynamical properties which we can examine exactly. In the modern language, this is really a consequence of holomorphy. In particular, there's a very characteristic pattern of the breaking of the U1R symmetry. first of all, in the N equals 1 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory, there's an anomaly induced by instantons, which breaks U1R down to a non-anomalous discrete subgroup, Z2N. And then the presence of a Gluino condensate effectively spontaneously breaks the residual discrete symmetry down to a Z2 subgroup. And in fact, using various methods, you can actually quantify that and calculate the value of the Gluino condensate in each vacuum. The simplest way to do it nowadays is to just go via the Seiberg-Witten solution of the N equals 2 theory and induced soft breaking. So in particular, because of the pattern of spontaneous symmetry breaking, we get this familiar picture of a set of vacua located in a circle or at the vertices of a polygon in the complex Gluino condensate plane. Now, if we look at the quantitative dependence of the Gluino coupling constant, the Gluino condensate, on the parameters of the ultraviolet theory, it's notable, well, first of all, we have this phase, which is just dictated by the pattern of spontaneous symmetry breaking, but it's notable that it comes with the Yang-Mills instanton factor, not to an integer power, but to a fractional power. So in some very formal sense, it's to be identified with the effects of fractional instantons. Now, the reason that doesn't make any direct sense is obviously because we're talking about a strongly coupled theory in the infrared, and classical arguments based on instantons are entirely invalid. But the emphasis here is that there is an effect here, which because of that power of 1 over n, in fact, is going to be something that is not subleading in the large n limit, and in fact, will have a non-trivial dependence on lambda. In fact, it's exponentially suppressed as a power of 1 over lambda, where lambda is the Toft coupling. So this is, in fact, the picture which is valid only for small values of lambda. And the question is, what happens as we increase lambda? And ultimately, the question I want to answer is, what happens to this picture as we go to the regime of large lambda, where hopefully we might be able to compare with results computed on the supergravity side? Well, first, a couple of qualitative points. The first point is that this Z2N symmetry, which is so familiar in the pure N equals 1 theory, is actually not a symmetry of the N equals 4 theory. And as soon as you move away from the decoupling limit, the presence of the additional chiral multiplets, and in particular their potential in the n equals 4 Lagrangian, will break the symmetry. So we certainly expect that this pattern of vacua located in the S-plane will change as we vary lambda. Although we lose something, we also gain something, because even a classical analysis of the n equals 1 star theory shows that you find many extra vacua, and these characteristically are vacua in which the gauge group is broken down to some subgroup by Higgsing. And in fact, you find when you do that, that there are vacua in many different phases. And this was essentially the subject that was studied in the paper of Dinaghi and Witten, where they showed that the vacua actually have a very beautiful pattern that can be understood in terms of a Toft's classification of the different phases, massive phases. So specifically, Toft's idea essentially works out what condensates are consistent with the presence of a mass gap and characterizes the condensate in terms of an electric and a magnetic charge, if you like, which are contained in the group Zn cross Zn. And in fact, the possible massive phase groups, his result were that those actually correspond to order n subgroups of Zn cross Zn. And in fact, if you count those in the straightforward way, you find the total number is the sum of divisors of the rank of the gauge group. So the beautiful result of Dinaghi and Witten is that in their treatment of the n equals 1 star theory as a soft breaking from n equals 2, they discovered that the theory has exactly one vacuum in each massive phase. They also discovered something extremely interesting, which was that that there is actually an action of the underlying SL2Z of the n equals 4 theory on these vacua. And this is fairly straightforward to understand with the following set of connections. We know that the n equals 4 theory is characterized by a BPS spectrum of monopoles and dions, and we know that there is an action of SL2Z on that. If we break n equals 4 to n equals 2, we get a non-trivial Coulomb branch with a set of singular points at which certain BPS states become light and ultimately will condense. So the action of SL2Z on the BPS spectrum of the n equals 4 theory is actually inherited by in the elliptic curves that describe the n equals 2 theory. Sorry, they're not elliptic curves. They're complex curves which aren't elliptic. And ultimately, we know that when we break from the picture of Seiberg and Witten how we break n equals 2 to n equals 1, the points on the Coulomb branch that survive are precisely precisely those points of maximal degeneracy of the complex curve, and these correspond precisely to the vacua. So the action of the SL2Z of the n equals 4 theory is inherited then by singular points on the Coulomb branch of the n equals 2 theory, and then ultimately by an action on the vacua of the resulting n equals 1 theory. And as you might imagine, the SL2Z, as you would expect from a U1 theory, interchanges Higgs and confinement phases, but it also mixes various shades of oblique confinement in which different kind of magnetic condensates are present. The theory also, I should mention, has a large number of massless vacua in a Coulomb phase, which are mapped to themselves or mapped to other Coulomb vacua by the action of SL2Z. So my aim now is to try and start from a slightly different starting point, but the aim is to actually extract some information about the values of holomorphic quantities in each of these vacua. So the first step in doing that might seem like a rather sideways move, is actually to follow a strategy which was also initiated by Seiberg and Witten of considering the compactification of a theory on S1, a four-dimensional theory on S1, down to three dimensions. So it'll emerge in the course of my discussion why this is a good idea. If we consider now classically consider the n equals 1 star theory, in four dimensions it has essentially isolated vacua, but as soon as we compactify on S1, new directions in field space open up as as being flat directions which preserve now the three-dimensional Lorentz symmetry. So in particular, we have a non-trivial Wilson line that comes from the component of the gauge field in the dimensionally reduced dimension. Sorry, the component of the gauge field in the reduced dimension. And in particular, this is going to be a periodic variable, as usual, because because large gauge transformations induce 2 pi shifts of the Wilson line, and we have to divide out by that. Less obviously, once we go to three dimensions, we can also eliminate an abelian gauge field in terms of another periodic scalar, and in this case, the periodicity is related to the fact that magnetic charge is quantized. Now, if we actually want to go further and write a low energy effective theory, which preserves n equals 1 supersymmetry in the four-dimensional sense, we obviously have to write that in terms of, as we have only scalar fields, we have to write that in terms of chiral superfields. And in fact, you can work out that the relevant chiral superfield, at least classically, is the following combination of the Wilson line and the dual photon. Now, the nice thing about that is that as we have two periodic variables and we combine them in a complex combination, inevitably, the resulting complex scalar field lives on a complex torus. And for convenience, well, for some of the further discussion, it'll be useful just to discuss the obvious fact that we can represent this torus as the quotient of the complex plane by a particular lattice. So in fact, the Coulomb branch of this SU2 theory is just the quotient of this torus by the Weyl group. Now, this is already very striking, and in particular, this is something that's been emphasized by Seiberg in the context of the theory with 16 supercharges, that already we've gained something in that the action of SL2Z on the fields has become something manifest and tangible. In fact, it just appears as electromagnetic duality transformations will appear as modular transformations of this torus. That doesn't mean that any theory I'm considering will automatically obey SL2Z duality. It just means that all quantities which are only sensitive to the complex structure of this torus rather than its volume should be manifestly SL2Z invariant. And we'll see explicitly how that works in a moment. Now, this appearance of a torus in field space after compactification has a very nice analog in string theory, in the way that SL2Z duality of the type 2B theory is geometrized after going to M theory via T duality to the type 2A theory. And of course, that similarity is not an accident, but actually takes on a life of its own when we realize the theory that we're interested in, or at least in this case, I'll be talking about the N equals 4 theory itself without mass terms, at least initially. So we can, of course, realize the theory we're interested in on ND3 brains. But now as we compactify the four-dimensional theory, we compactify one dimension along along the D3 brains, and we can perform a T-duality to the type 2A theory. Then we get ND2 brains, which are localized on the compact dimension. And if we separate the D2 brains, we go to the Coulomb phase that I just talked about on the previous transparency. This direction in the Coulomb phase along the compact direction, of course, being associated with the Wilson line. But now, in fact, we can now lift this picture to M theory, and we know that when we do that, an additional direction will appear via the duality between the type 2A string theory and M theory. And the nice fact is that this additional dimension is precisely, the position of the brains in this extra dimension is precisely what we want to associate with the dual photon. And this is a familiar fact in various which has been applied in various situations to the 16 supercharge theory. So in particular, in this picture, it's quite clear that the Coulomb branch will involve the configuration space of M2 brains that are located, localized, as well as being localized in the other dimensions. They're located at points on this torus, and this torus is a torus of complex structure tau. So in other words, we can identify the classical Coulomb branch of the theory, which is the symmetric product of n copies of this torus, when we take into account the Weyl group, with a configuration space of M2 brains, which are localized on the torus. So what can we do with this picture? Well, there's actually a standard story which happens in theories in n equals 1 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theories reduced on a circle to three dimensions. And that is that if we have instantons which appear as solitons in the four-dimensional theory, Then after compactification, they're also going to have finite action, which means that they won't appear as states in the Hilbert space, but will rather be interpreted as instantons. And it was demonstrated a long time ago that in these theories, these instantons can quite happily contribute to a superpotential, which lifts the vacuum degeneracy that I've just described. And in particular, in terms of, if we now think about n positions of the M2 brains, as parameterized by n complex fields X, which are the Wilson lines and dual photons of each element of the Cartan subalgebra of UN, then typically we're going to generate a holomorphic potential. In fact, the contribution of a single instanton looks like e to the difference between the two complex fields that I've introduced there. So in particular, this simple contribution of a single instanton follows from some work by Affleck, Harvey, and Witten. In fact, the story is much more complicated in the present theory because of effects, basically because although it appears that multi-monopoles have many extra zero modes, these zero modes are in fact lifted because they're not protected by supersymmetry. And there are various approaches by which you can try and go about working out what the exact superpotential is. And in fact, the exact superpotential involves not only the contributions of multi-monopoles, but also the contributions of twisted monopoles that were first considered by, I first read about them in a paper by Li and Yi, monopoles which only exist when you compactify on a circle of finite radius, which have non-trivial topological gauge transformations as you go around the circle. So in fact, there are a very large number of different types of configuration which contribute. But in fact, it's rather easy to work out what the exact superpotential has to be. In fact, a result I proved a couple of years ago is that the exact superpotential is given by a function which involves pairwise interaction between the SUN roots, and the function which characterizes the interaction is the Weierstrass function. In the simplest case of SU2, there are several ways to derive this. One way is simply thinking about what kind of superpotential could we have on this torus, and you very quickly realize the only elliptic function that's consistent with the known vacuum structure, in other words, the known number of vacua, is the Weierstrass function, basically because it's essentially the only function whose elliptic function whose derivative is of order 3, and therefore matches the known fact that we expect the theory to have 3 vacua. So in fact, there are several other developments from this that I won't have time to talk about, but this superpotential has a very interesting content in terms of semi-classical contributions from these various kinds of multi-monopoles and twisted monopoles. And actually, you can check a lot of the coefficients in this superpotential by first principle semi-classical analysis. And it turns out that the coefficients have an interesting relation to the Euler characteristics of the moduli spaces of BPS monopoles computed by Siegel and Selby. But that's an avenue I certainly don't have time to go down. Another interesting avenue is that this is another example of a general result where the superpotential of a theory with 4 supercharges obtained by compactifying a 4-dimensional theory coincides with the pairwise interaction potential of the integrable system, which is associated with the corresponding theory with 8 supercharges in 4 dimensions. That's a bit of a mouthful, but there's a general correspondence between integrable systems and n equals 2 theories in 4 dimensions. And in fact, it's known that the integrable system associated with with the mass-deformed n equals 4 theory with 8 supercharges considered by Donaghy and Witten is precisely what's known as the elliptic Calogero-Moser model, of which this is the pairwise potential. There are other examples of this correspondence involving Toda potentials, which are actually subsumed in this result. How am I doing for time? Sorry? How many? 2 minutes. Okay. Well, this is going to be difficult in 2 minutes. But I just would quickly sketch a few phenomena, which I don't have time to describe in detail. One particular phenomena is that there is a very nice way in which these results reproduce those of Donaghy-Witten as far as the actual structure of the vacua is concerned and the action of SL2Z on the vacua. Very simply put, it follows from it follows easily from this representation of the Weierstrass function as a sum over a lattice that some of the supersymmetric vacua are actually just configurations where where the various variables x, or the M2 brains, if you like them in the string theory picture, align to form a lattice. And in fact, you can count the possible lattices, and they're in one-to-one correspondence with the order n subgroups of Zn cross Zn. And in fact, this precisely reproduces the structure of the Donaghy-Witten solution, where basically these configurations, well, basically the n equals 1 vacua correspond to certain unbranched multiple coverings of the torus, which are actually associated with these lattices gamma prime that I've introduced. So the bit which I hope to tell you about but don't have time is the fact is the end game of this, which is the fact that you can use this superpotential to calculate basically the value of the chiral quantities the value of the chiral quantities in each of these vacua. In particular, you get explicit formulae for the value of the superpotential in each vacuum, from which, by standard Ward identities, you can deduce the values of the various chiral condensates. There are various features which I wanted to have more time to discuss. The first is obviously that what appears is in fact a series of these fractional instanton expansions that corrects the one fractional instanton result of the n equals 1 supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory. But a more striking feature is the following, that actually if you take the Toft limit, these formulae have highly non-trivial dependence on the Toft coupling, and they actually exhibit something that was to us entirely unexpected, which is that they actually have, at least in the confining vacua, they have quasi-modular properties, almost modular properties in the Toft coupling. In particular, this includes the transformation where you simply invert the Toft coupling, which relates the regime of asymptotic freedom to the regime of where supergravity is valid. But actually, as I could explain if I had more time, this is only a duality of the infrared theory, and in fact, you could have guessed it directly from Donaghy-Witten theory, because it's actually the appropriate manifestation of the low-energy duality of the corresponding Seiberg-Witten curve. In fact, the Donaghy-Witten curve that represents this vacuum. So finally, all of this does admit direct comparison with the Polchinski-Strassler geometry, which I'm not going to have time to review. In fact, there was a large degree of agreement found by Polchinski and Strassler with our results, in particular on BPS domain walls. And we subsequently extended the agreement to include chiral condensates. One of the most striking features of our results, which we didn't understand before, is the fact that there are actually exponentially suppressed powers of the Toft coupling if you use the duality that I showed in the previous transparency to go to the unquote supergravity regime. And Polchinski and Strassler actually found a nice interpretation of this in terms of 2B world sheet instantons, which are wrapped on the 2-sphere, which magically appears by the Myers effect when you break n equals 4 supersymmetry down to n equals 1 supersymmetry. So there were several points of contact. And to conclude with, I've had to rush somewhat, but to conclude with, I won't explain this, but I will just give the answer to the question that I posed as to what happens to that characteristic distribution of vacua when I go from lambda very small to lambda very large. Well, the answer, in fact, is that it undergoes quite a qualitative change. And rather than having points on a circle which become dense in the large n limit, you actually have a set of points which are separated. And they have an accumulation point at the origin of the complex Gluino condensate plane. This is a direct consequence of our formulae. I'd like to say more about this and work in progress, but we would like to generalize this approach to supersymmetric gauge theories to other gauge theories that might be interesting in this context, like marginal deformations of n equals 4, studied by Lee and Strassler, and this theory studied recently by Klebanoff and Strassler. I'll stop there, as I guess I'm out of time.
Thanks. Any questions?
Thanks. What is the significance of the modular anomaly that you have in the Gluino condensates?
First, the modular invariance of in the Toft coupling. Well, the significance is the following. Basically, The n equals 1 confining vacuum can be understood, as usual, as corresponding to one of the singular points on the moduli space of the corresponding n equals 2 theory, where certain BPS states become massless. Now, the distinction between this theory, which has adjoint matter, and the basic n equals 1 theory is that the complex curve, the maximally degenerate complex curves, which occur at the singular points, are not spheres as they were in the basic Seiberg-Witten setup, but they're actually tori. And they're tori, in fact, which happen to correspond to multiple covers, n-fold multiple covers of the standard torus, which describes the standard torus whose complex structure is given by n equals 4 coupling constant. So in particular, in the confining vacuum, the relevant elliptic curve, which determines all the holomorphic quantities, is actually a torus with complex structure tau over n. And because low-energy Seiberg-Witten duality involves modular transformations of that elliptic curve, that's essentially where this symmetry comes from.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, so if there are no further questions, let us thank Professor Nick Dore again.